During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
All right, so coordinators coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Tyrann Mathieu talking as well, and the potato-shaped planet. You are set for the rest of your day, which also... There are a lot of different shapes of potatoes,
yeah.
So that doesn't really give you much of a description of it's shaped like a potato.
Is it like a French fry? A curly fry?
These are a tater tot. Here's the truth. It's shaped more like a football upon further research, and it is around a star named WASP-103.
Oh.
This planet is WASP-103b.
Whoa.
They found a football-shaped planet and named it WASP. Coincidence? I think not.
No, they named it WASP. That's what they... named it.
Unfortunately, I didn't have time to put that detail
in
the sports center.
Do we have time to name it WASP?
I didn't, but now we do.
Do we have time to find WASP?
All right, we got time to talk with Matt Lane from KC Sports Network, the KC Laboratory podcast, joining us here in the zone. Matt, how are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm just here to listen to you guys talk about the potato-shaped planet now. We don't even have to do this now. Let's just talk more about the shapes of planets in the solar system.
Yeah, the potato shape doesn't make sense because when you see the picture of it, it looks like a football. Why not just say it's shaped like a football? You know why? Because they're astronomers. They're dorks. Dorks. They talk about potatoes and not football like men. We're men, we talk football. Yeah, that's what it looks like to me is a football or rugby. Doesn't matter, either one. But yeah, and it's named WASP, so those of us in Kansas City would be the ones that would care about that.
So. Perfect. This is exactly what we need. Now we just get it. Now, yeah, it's named WASP. We're no longer going to call it the potato football. It's just going to be known as WASP.
I mean, isn't that a sign from the stars that it's aligning, that they found a planet that they're going to name WASP that looks like a football right before the playoffs start? I mean, I don't know. Team of Destiny, what else can you look at? Like, that's more of a sign of things to come than anything I've ever seen before.
And I mean, we're only a couple weeks after the Chiefs ran it again to Mecole Hardman
versus
the Bengals.
So that's right.
It's all lining up right now.
That's exactly right. Matt Lane is our guest. What is your feeling entering the postseason? And I don't know how much it might have changed over the last couple of weeks since they took care of the Chargers, but where are you at in your feeling of this Chiefs team as now the real season for this Chiefs team starts?
It's tricky. I think it's just uncertainty because sometimes in some games it's for the Chiefs, especially down the stretch, it's looked really, really good, whether it's the whole game or part of the game. And then other times you still see the same struggles they've kind of dealt with all season. So I think for the big part is I'm kind of falling back on the aspect that this team's been here. They've been grinding through the playoffs. They've been grinding all the way through the playoffs for the past 2 years, to the AFC Championship game before that. These guys, the players, the coaches, they understand everything that goes into the season-long grind, and it's the playoffs that matter. So I'm holding out a sliver of hope that there has not been holding anything back, but they've been preparing for the playoffs rather than the regular season this whole time, and we're about to see something entirely different, entirely better than what we've seen throughout these, you know, first 18, 19 weeks of the season.
Do you fear the Steelers?
No, I can't. I cannot talk myself into that. This is very reminiscent of the last Colts playoff game where it was just very clear that the Chiefs were the better team. And the Chiefs, you know, hadn't won the Super Bowl then. They hadn't had the same level of success. But it was just very clear they were a better team. And it was just kind of the boogeyman of the Colts playoff matchup that was causing people concern. That's what I feel like now. Chiefs are definitely better. I don't really see this Steelers team competing with them regardless of what's happened, you know, in the past.
See, and I'm with you on that. The Colts game is a really interesting comparison. I hadn't thought about that. That the feeling around, I felt like, okay, the Chiefs should win by double digits over the Colts. The reason I'm not going to pick it is because it's the Colts. And we've just seen too many horrors happen at Arrowhead Stadium in the playoffs. And we don't know what this wunderkind, once-in-a-generation quarterback is going to look like when it comes playoff time. You can be awesome during the regular season and be the MVP, but now it's go time. Now it's time to see how good you are in the postseason. And they go out there, and they show that they were the better team. And any concern was pre-Mahomes. And they go and win by, what, 18 points in that game, 31-13, and it started off quick. They got a punt from the Colts, went and scored, got a punt, went and scored. And it got a little nip-tuck later on, but they really kept the Colts at bay. I think the matchup is more lopsided in this one this weekend, and I feel like the fear or concern or worry or, hey, you know, it's the playoffs, so you can't just simply dismiss the Steelers. That's such a pre-Mahomes feeling for... I think that still might be lingering there.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. It's kind of like, as a Chiefs fan, we all went through a lot of time of watching them have, you know, good teams in the regular season or eking into the playoffs and then just kind of falling short for so long that when that Colts game rolled around, now it was coming off a bye week, so that's a little bit different, but still similar. You still had like this feeling of dread, or a lot of fans had this feeling of dread just because of the past. You go into that game, the teams, I think they were still uneven, but definitely closer than they are now. But then you get that game, you know, it was 24-7 at halftime. It wasn't particularly really that close. And then the Chiefs go on to have the success over these past couple seasons. So now this year, I do think there's less of that because you know how good Patrick Mahomes is. You know this team has won a Super Bowl, been to another. You know what they're capable of. So you still have that to fall back on. But I do. I'm starting to see some swirling. I'm talking to some fans, mm-hmm. some other people. And there's some concern that this Steelers team is just something crazy is going to happen, that whatever it might be is just going to come out because we can't beat the Steelers in the playoffs. We don't beat the Steelers in the playoffs. It's just, it reminds me so much of the feelings of that Colts game getting started up. And people are just kind of afraid of what's happened in the past and not really looking at what these two teams provide right now.
It's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that Colts comparison, but it's so spot on because of, you know, going back to that 2016 season and the, you know, the field goal game and the holding on Harrison and then the first down with the Steelers. And you're like, you know, you had a home game and it's this damn Steelers team. You can't beat them. And it was the same thing with the Colts. You just couldn't beat them. You even had a lead by 60 there in Indianapolis, and somehow you lost that game. It felt like 60. Insurmountable lead, which was not as insurmountable as we thought. But you exorcised those demons a few years ago, and I think the same thing will take place this weekend. There's only been two playoff games that Patrick Mahomes has played in that they have not scored 30. That was the game in which he got injured against the Browns where they scored 22. They would have gotten to 30 on that one. And then, of course, we know about the Super Bowl when they only score 9 points. I bring that up because you're going to have to get to 30 to beat the Chiefs. So what's the path for Pittsburgh to win? Can they hold the Chiefs under 30 and be only the second team to do that with Mahomes at quarterback, like the Bucs' amazing defense? Or can the Steelers find a way to put 30 points on the board with that offense against the Chiefs' defense?
The Steelers do have a quality defense. Like, they have that going for them. I don't think they're as good as what the Buccaneers defense was playing, like, in the playoff push last year. But it's still a good defense. So you could maybe convince me that their best route to winning this game is a lower scoring bout. Like, the Chiefs offense this year, by a lot of metrics, has not been as good as it was last year or the year before. Like, there is a reason to believe that this Steelers defense can hold the Chiefs to 20 points, 24 points, and maybe their offense can eke out enough points. But even then, like, it seems really difficult to get this Steelers team above 20 points against this Chiefs defense, especially after what we saw the last time these two teams matched up. When you're just looking at the matchup from the both sides, it's going to be hard for the Steelers to score points. Like, I don't see any way they get to 30. If it happens, it's going to be a lot of blown tackles, a lot of missed tackles on short passes that the Steelers turn into these big, long games just with their receivers making plays after the catch. And just, that seems like a long shot to score to keep up with the Chiefs. I think it'd have to be a defensive battle for them to pull this one off.
So is what's the path then? Injuries aside, right? Knock on wood, don't want to talk about that because that changes a lot. But injuries aside, you know, you talked about different things that could happen or need to happen. Is that ultimately the path that they get some a crazy touchdown? Like the way the Houston Texans started that divisional round a couple of years ago where they jump out to a 24-0 lead and you're like, the defense, you know, gave up 7 and it was a blown coverage. Like when Houston had to drive, they did nothing. They got a gift touchdown on the fumbled punt with Tyreek Hill. They got another, you know, drive that started in, you know, Chiefs territory and all they did was kick a field goal there. Like they didn't do really much offensively and somehow they put 24 points on the board. What's the path if we're talking about no injuries and the Steelers win?
That would be a great way for favorite to start them. If they get that, you know, that fluky start going down that big to this Steelers team with their defense, which is better than that Texans defense, it's a better coach team. You spot them a lead like that, like the Chiefs did the Texans, I think that would be a really hard, you know, comeback for the Chiefs to make. So Mike Tomlin's a completely different level of coach than what Bill O'Brien was doing for the Texans at the time. So, like, you can't go down that big. I think the big thing, they'd have to have some fluky plays. I think we've seen kind of the offensive plan of attack to attack the Chiefs' defense down the stretch. So the Steelers, in some way, could mimic a little bit of what the Cincinnati Bengals did in terms of a lot of quick passes outside the number short, like a lot of short, quick out routes, little bubble screens, stuff like that. That's very much within their play, Matt Canada's playbook. And then Ben Roethlisberger, he doesn't like to hold the ball long, but he still throws a pretty decent deep ball. They are not afraid to challenge, you know, the outside the numbers with some fade routes or some go routes. So just loading up a couple of these deep shots down the sideline and challenging Charvarius Ward and Rashad Fenton to make plays on the football that they haven't been making as well down the stretch this year. You kind of combine those two things. I think that's where you'd see the Steelers have some level of offensive success. Maybe they break a big play or two out of that, get a fluky turnover, or, you know, earned turnover, whatever it may be, jump out to an early lead and just let that pass rush kind of tee off. I think that's their path to success, is somehow jumping out to an early lead and challenging outside, you know, the Chiefs defense outside the numbers.
Yeah, I feel like they've got no chance if they're negative in turnovers, and they probably have to be positive by a couple, maybe three in this game. I'm just, you know, probably bordering on arrogant and looking past the Steelers, and I understand that it's, you know, the playoffs and everything. I heard Sarin in the afternoon say that, you know, he had a caller on Monday that said maybe the Chiefs explore resting their starters and put in, you know, Henny and resting Tyreek and Kelsey. And Corey and I joked about it on Monday as well. He went on a show in Pittsburgh with a guy named Tim Benz, and he said, you know, and Tim was like, so what's the feeling there? And Sarin was like, well, you know, we've had a couple of people say maybe the Chiefs should rest their starters. It's kind of the disrespect for Pittsburgh. And the guy in Pittsburgh said, yeah, I agree with them. They probably could rest their starters and win this game. Like, I don't know who has less faith in the Steelers, Chiefs fans or Steelers fans.
That's the tricky part. Like, you even look at Ben Roethlisberger's comments that he was coming out with yesterday, talking about how they have no chance. They're just going to go out and have fun because they shouldn't be there. And I'm sure some of that's kind of trying to play the victim, trying to play the nobody believes in me aspect of it. But some of the direct quotes in there, just like, they were pretty telling. And I think that's the way everyone feels. The Steelers are one of the worst teams to make the playoffs that have, you know, they increase the amount of teams that are making it. So that plays a role. They're just not a good playoff team. They're going up against the team that has been, that has represented the AFC in the last two Super Bowls, that went to the AFC Championship game and lost in overtime the year before that. Like, they're going up against what is the AFC's boogeyman right now, the team that's beating everybody year after year in the playoffs as one of the worst playoff teams. It's hard to have a lot of faith. I mean, if you're a Steelers fan, an ex-player, somebody that's not out there on the field and going into this game, because you're outmatched on almost every single level. You have an aging quarterback leading the team. They don't do anything particularly great except for play, you know, pretty good defense, a pretty good pass rush. It's hard to build like a path to them to win this game.
Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Tyreek with the heel injury. Travis Kelce left the game, although they were just downing the football after he hobbled off the field a little bit. He talked yesterday. He's fine and full practices for both of those guys. Even though that's the case, are you concerned at all with the health of those guys down the stretch, and especially seeing Tyreek, you know, limp as much as he did in that game? And, oh, by the way, get him the heck out of the game. Stop putting him in there when he's hobbling around.
So Tyreek Hill coming back in the game for specific plays, I thought was pretty telling, that the Chiefs didn't trust the other guys to run some of those specific plays. So,
like, you
saw every time they tried to call the Chad Henne rollout play to pick up those first downs, they brought Tyreek Hill in. They didn't trust, you know, anybody else to run that route. They were using him in specific situations where they didn't believe somebody else was ready to take that role. But that was telling for more so for the rest of the receiver group. Like, there's clearly still a massive gap in even what they feel comfortable asking guys to do. I would say this, though, as well. Those athletic trainers, they wouldn't let Tyreek Hill out there if they thought there was a chance that Hill could get worse. I'm not saying it's fine. I'm not saying it doesn't hurt him still or won't impact him. But being out there, those guys wouldn't let him go out there in that game if it could possibly get worse or if they thought it could get worse. So I feel okay about him. It's the Travis Kelce one that makes me a little nervous because he's been banged up this year. He has not had, you know, his most healthy year of his career. He's getting up there in age a little bit more so now. And just even reading his quotes talking about, you know, there's no excuses in the playoffs. Everyone's beat up at this point in time. Like, it doesn't sound like a guy that maybe is feeling physically 100% going into the playoffs, which you shouldn't be. But I think he's so important to what this team has to do on third down, what they have to do over the middle of the field, that you kind of need him at that Chargers level, and you can't get the Travis Kelce you were getting in between that, you know, before the bye week when he was dealing with that neck injury or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and look, they won the game without Travis Kelce the previous go-around. Tyreek was limited. He played like 29 plays. And even when he's out there, granted, the defense has to be aware of where he is at. But I think he played 12 of his 29 plays on the first drive, and then it was sporadic from that point moving forward, and the Chiefs were still able to drive the football, make plays, score points without Tyreek being a regular mainstay on the field with that. So we'll see what happens this go-around, and as Patrick Mahomes said and, you know, Andy Reid said, that you'll see different things. They will adjust. Chiefs will adjust. There'll be some different wrinkles that'll be thrown out there. Kyle Brandt, got some drew the ire of some Chiefs fans with his commentary about Tyreek Hill, and that, you know, Hill has only one 50-yard touchdown this year, and that's, you know, game one against the Cleveland Browns, and the Chiefs have to have Tyreek being explosive. That's what's missing, and that's, you know, what could keep the Chiefs from winning the Super Bowl. I understand what he's saying with that, that typically, historically, that's how the Chiefs have been the great offense, is that Tyreek will beat you over the top and you've got to worry about that. And at any given play, they can go 75 yards, and that's what defenses are not allowing to happen. Is it not giving enough credit to what Tyreek has done this year by not being allowed to have that deep threat, by being that guy that can score 50, 60-yard touchdowns, that he's had to become, you know, sometimes it's an insult to call somebody a possession receiver, but isn't there an element of Tyreek this year being somewhat of a possession receiver underneath, catch the ball, go pick up yards, and he's been able to do that, run a right route, find the, you know, the weak spot in the zone, and not just, hey, you're going to beat this team deep. When Mahomes gets outside the pocket, just run the other way and run as fast as you can, that he's become more of an overall receiver. I feel like that commentary is, while historically accurate, is not really crediting enough with what Tyreek has done within this offense, the way defenses are playing them.
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I 100% see Kyle Brandt's point of view on that, because we all know that there's a lack of explosive elements of this offense this year that's been there in years past, and one of those biggest things is Tyreek Hill's, you know, yards per target, yards per reception, all this stuff is significantly lower than it's been in years past, and it's because they're having a hard time finding these connections downfield, whether it's the defense is taking them away with their coverages, offensive line protection not holding up, whatever it may be, that aspect is clearly limited. And I think a big reason it's limited is Tyreek Hill's been having to play as your X wide receiver, you know, your isolated wide receiver on the line of scrimmage so much this year because they don't have somebody else that they trust to do it. Byron Pringle's, you know, up and coming as the season's going on. They still like using him out of the slot a ton rather than on the line of scrimmage on the outside. Mecole Hardman, same thing. Tyreek Hill's been their wide receiver that they put on the line of scrimmage to play outside so much, and that's just a lot harder to get him vertically down the field, to get him running, you know, those deep over routes or those post-option routes where he's just running across the middle of the field when he's lined up out there. So they've had a hard time getting him into positions that they like to put him in to run those deep shots. But then to your point, he's been a pretty good, you know, possession receiver. He's been good at picking up first downs. He's getting open when they need him open. They're doing a good job getting him across on these shallow crosses to let him run after the catch. He's working open or back towards Patrick Mahomes when the play breaks down a little bit. He hasn't been bad this year. It's just he's been utilized different, and the team's makeup has predicted that. The way teams are playing them has made him do that. So it's on both sides. I do think as the playoffs go on, though, they need someone to start taking the top off the defense. Hardman, Hill, somebody's got to start taking the top off, or I think it will get kind of ugly as they start to play some better teams.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not able to use his speed just by beating a team deep, but what the Chiefs have done is they've used Tyreek Hill's speed against the defense, and he's gone underneath a couple of times, caught the ball, and then he's beaten a guy that has the angle and got around the corner and picked up a first down. I think he's, what, third in the league in first down receptions this year. And I would be curious to see how many of those are, you know, behind the sticks, behind the first down where he had to run and pick it up. Because he's done that a number of times this year where throw a quick little out to Tyreek for 4 yards, beats the guy to the sideline, picks up a first down. And you're like, nobody else on the Chiefs picks up a first down except for Tyreek Hill there. So while his speed is not creating big plays, his speed is still being utilized in a way that isn't being credited enough because he's picking up first downs, whereas a guy would leave, you know, might be a third and three. And now you're one play away of getting off the field instead of, you know, first down because Tyreek just beat that guy to the corner because he's got, you know, angle breaking speed, which is, you know, not something we see very often. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. You had a tweet yesterday that somebody had said, you know, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is 100% healthy and you have all four running backs on the roster, how would you divide the workload among the four? And your answer was, whoever forces the Chiefs to run gap instead of wide zone gets every handoff. One, what is it about the difference there that you like that from the Chiefs? And is the answer actually Gore, since he has almost 50% of his runs are gap scheme instead of the zone concepts, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is only at a quarter? What's your thought process behind the gap versus the zone?
It's so tricky. So the Chiefs, when they run gap scheme stuff, so when they're running power, when they're pulling their offensive linemen around, trap power, you know, their counter runs, they're very successful. Like, they do a really good job locking those up. They have big, strong, athletic guys up front that can really create holes. So when you allow them to attack you vertically, go attack a defensive lineman, go attack a linebacker, they make a lot of movement, and then they create a lot of gaps for the running backs to cut off of them and make big gains. And I think you kind of see that with Derek Gore getting almost half of his runs are in these styles of runs. He also happens to have the most yards on dynamic runs, the most yards on runs over 15 yards. So he's getting the bigger chunk plays because he's running so out of this gap scheme. Jerick McKinnon's next in terms of the percentage of his yards on these big plays, whereas Darrell Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, yeah, they're the leading rushers. They get less of these gap plays, and they don't have near as many dynamic plays. They have a lot more short chunk plays, and I just don't think the offensive line's as good at blocking zone schemes, especially wide zone, that they are this gap stuff. Now, I think the running back skill set aren't great for wide zone. The Chiefs don't really have a one cut and explode through the line of scrimmage kind of runner. All the guys want to get north and south a little bit and then make their cut once they're already moving, not putting their foot in the ground and slashing through the offensive line. So it's just a weird meshing of styles paired with Andy Reid's RPO game, and that's why they can't get away from the zone stuff, is all of the RPOs work off of inside or outside zone. That's where their personnel wins. They want to play 11 personnel, keep Travis Kelce out there, maybe not necessarily put him in line to take on a defensive end, but have him split out a couple yards so he can work to a linebacker. That all works a lot better with the zone scheme that does trying to run gaps. So it's a really convoluted issue right now that the Chiefs are having, because they're better when they run gap, when they put Blake Bell in there with Travis Kelce and run power. And then they use Derek Gore on these because he's very decisive. He gets towards the end zone quickly, but it limits so much of their passing game that you'll never see Andy Reid fully based out of it, I don't think.
Yeah, that was the one thing when I looked at it and I saw the percentage there. My first takeaway was, okay, when Gore and McKinnon are getting the football, it's more of, we're running the football. And when it's a decided sort of, we're running the football, it's going to be that gap, that power. Whereas when Edwards-Helaire and Williams are the main running backs that are going to be in there for the large majority of plays, there's so much of an RPO game that Andy Reid's not going to go away from, because it puts the defense in a bind in deciding where they're going to go. And it allows Mahomes to make those decisions of, do I hand it off? Do I throw it, you know, down the line of scrimmage to Mecole Hardman? And, you know, some of those plays are being made, and Hardman, you know, after the catch, Tyreek Hill, things like that, or even over the middle to a Travis Kelce if it's in that RPO game. But it also limits the offensive lineman getting to the next level, creating those longer runs of 15, 16, 17 yards, because they don't know if you're passing the ball or if you're running it.
That's the biggest thing, is when Gore's in there, when McKinnon's in there, and I don't have any idea of the splits for this, but just working off of memory and watching games, it is very much you're getting a lot heavier personnel from the Chiefs. You're trying to grind out the clock a little bit or something like that. So they are getting the gap runs. But even when Darrell Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire get the opportunity to run on those plays, they look better. And it's just that's where the Chiefs' offensive line is so much better. So I think a big challenge for the Chiefs, and this is an off-season move, because I anticipate you see a lot of the same throughout the playoffs. The Chiefs will main out of zone stuff. They'll use their more fun, more efficient gap blocking stuff to hit bigger run plays. Like, they'll use them if they want to try to hit a dynamic run play. They'll see how a defense is playing it, see if linebackers are overcommitting one way or another, how they're playing it. Then they'll call counter all of a sudden, and you'll get a 12-yard run out of the Chiefs. That's what they use as like a play-action pass, but in the run game, they switch up their running scheme. I think you'll keep seeing that. I just hope going into next year, the Chiefs find a way to base their RPO game out of power or out of duo, just something that allows these offensive linemen to get more gap blocking in. It's been done. Oklahoma, where we all saw the Chiefs poach a bunch of these offensive linemen from, they do it a ton. They did it a ton there with Lincoln Riley. It's doable. It's just a little bit trickier if you don't want to leave Travis Kelce in line to be part of the run play.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see what happens with that. And look, if you're going to run power, this would seem like a pretty decent game to do it against, because the Steelers are 32nd against the run. So that's where that would come in handy, is if they get a big lead and in the second half they can sort of coast, then you bring in a Gore, maybe McKinnon, or just Williams or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and more of that gap, that power, because the Steelers have not shown that they can stop that consistently, and the Chiefs have shown that they are pretty damn consistent at running the ball when they do that. Matt Lang, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. A couple of quick ones for you. Players that can make an impact in your mind, or could step up, or maybe need to step up. In 2019, we saw Sammy Watkins have a huge three-game stretch, 14 receptions, 200-plus yards, a touchdown. We saw Damian Williams, where, some considered him the Super Bowl MVP. We saw Frank Clark become Clark the Shark. Dan Sorensen made huge plays in that, Super Bowl run. Are there players that you can identify or look at and say, these are maybe the best candidates to fill the role of a Sorensen or Sammy Watkins or Damian Williams, something like that? They don't have to be offense or defense specifically, but any guys that come to mind for that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always kind of put this in there. Kendall Fuller having to step in for Juan Thornhill.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a huge one to me. I got him a big contract because he wasn't coming off a great year. So, he's another guy. And so, thinking just we'll give one offensive and one defensive, I think Charvarius Ward needs a big playoff push. I think teams have seen the Broncos and the Bengals kind of have success attacking him vertically, and that had kind of been the book on him in years past, and he played better this year versus that. But I do think that teams are going to challenge the Chiefs vertically on the outside. Charvarius Ward's been their clear number one corner on the outside this year. I think he needs a big, big performance this playoff, and that'll go a long way in helping the Chiefs win. And then offensively, Byron Pringle, he's been getting a bigger and bigger role in this offense. You already talked about how Sammy Watkins has stepped up in the 2018-2019 playoffs for the Chiefs. The Chiefs need somebody else. They need that third option. I don't care about the regular season as much for that third receiver option. I know that's a big hot debate. But when you get to the playoffs, when good teams key in on Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, you do need someone else to step up and take advantage of their opportunities. It's got to be Mecole Hardman or Byron Pringle, and Byron Pringle's just usage is very similar to what Sammy Watkins has been in terms of yards per catch, the down and distances they do target him on. So I think he could be in for a big playoff.
Yeah, we did the exercise earlier this week, and I came up with Pringle was my guy. Corey actually went with Clyde Edwards-Helaire just because, if he's healthy, but also, if he's the best back on the team, then show it. And then Beards went with Melvin Ingram. All guys that I think certainly could do that. I'm in agreement with Ward, because if Ward steps up and gets back to playing like he did earlier in the season or middle of the season, then, yeah, the defense can be a little scarier, because you're right, they have been attacking him. I don't know if that's just because they find the mismatch with him, or they don't want to throw to Snead or near Thornhill or Matthew or things like that, that they're like, well, we'll take our chances with Ward, and when 49 is in the game, we'll definitely do that. Who wins? Prediction for Sunday, if there's a score in mind for you as to what the final looks like Sunday night.
I definitely have the Chiefs winning this one. I don't know if it'll be a pretty game. I don't know if it'll look as good as it did the first time, just because I think there's a chance the Chiefs come in. And I kind of relate it to this. It's like the number one seed in the college football playoffs, how they usually look past their opponent and start focusing on the championship game, just because it is usually such a mismatch between number one and number four. I kind of think the Chiefs might come into this game with that attitude. Not that they're going to go out there and play bad, just it might be vanilla. it might be a little bit bland compared to what you would anticipate. So I think it might be a little ugly to start, but the Chiefs, I mean, talent is going to be too much. So I kind of have them winning 27-13, and it just might not look as good as it did the first time. That's going to get everybody talking, but I think they'll win comfortably.
All right, Super Bowl, who? Getting everybody to weigh in before the playoffs start. Who wins the Super Bowl and who loses?
My preseason was the Chiefs over the Rams, but the Rams are falling apart on me. So I'll go easy, go Chiefs over Packers. I'm sure that's one of the more popular picks right now.
Yep, the two favorites, I guess, if you want to go with that in Vegas. We'll see what happens there. Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. Matt, great stuff as always. Very much appreciate the time, sir. We will talk soon. Enjoy the football, man.
Oh, thank you, guys. You too.
There's Matt Lane, KC Sports Network. Go check it out. And KC Laboratory Podcast. Great stuff there at KC Sports Network. Tyreek, the way that they're using him, Kelce, whether there's concern with that hip, he has been, banged up this year. He's 32 years old, and it's a season in which, 17 games, probably not a bad thing that he had to miss the Steelers game. Maybe get a little bit of a rest there. Would have been nice to have a bye week this week, but he doesn't. That's reality, and we'll see what he looks like out there against the Steelers. And interesting about the running game there with the zone concept versus the gap concept, that the Chiefs are so much more successful when they're running that gap scheme, that power scheme. Difference is you take away the RPO game to the way that the Chiefs run it if you're going with that power. That seems to be more of a you're running that when you've got the lead and you're running when you win, not running to win. That's why he listed those with the percentage. Derek Gore leads the Chiefs running backs in percentage of gap runs. 47% of Derek Gore's runs are gap. Jerick McKinnon, 42% are gap runs, power runs. Williams, 36%, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 24%. And my first thought there is, when Gore's in the game, it feels like the Chiefs have a pretty decent lead, and they're running out the clock, and they're finishing up the game, and they don't want Edwards-Helaire or Williams in there getting hurt or banged up or whatever, and you can limit the reps for those guys because of a 17-game season. Does that change then at the end of the game if Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are fully healthy, then those guys are getting those, gap scheme concepts? Or do they feel like Gore's the best running back they have on the team when it comes to some of those that power game, and then they're going to put him in there? I think we'll see a lot of that. Maybe not a lot, maybe relatively to what we see with the Chiefs, more of that against the Steelers because their run defense is so bad. In fact, it's ranked 32nd in the league in run defense. They are not good. Some would say bad against the run. So we'll see if that's the case. But when you've got Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire with that small amount of percentage of the power of the gap, which is just showing you that they're in on a lot of those RPOs, and that's going to be more of that zone, and you're not taking the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands to where you can run it if it's there, but you put the defense in a precarious situation. They've got to decide who they're going to guard, make a decision, and therefore Mahomes can make a decision off of that. But you're also limiting the plays that can happen downfield because the linemen aren't getting to the second level. And when we say, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, his longest run is 17 yards, I think part of that comes into play because he's facing or running the ball a lot in the RPOs zone concept. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling more zone right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Or can he actually go through a... Sorry. I'm getting choked up about this Patriots right dynasty being over.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you to Matt Lane, KC Sports Network, KC Laboratory Podcast. We'll talk with Myron Medcalf from ESPN, some college basketball. Hang out with Myron. Sports or Leisure abbreviated, and then also we'll hear from the coordinators, and we think Tyrann Mathieu coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, around 1:20 or so. Not much news around the NFL today other than Juju Smith-Schuster is practicing with the Steelers, but has not been designated to return from the IR. My guess is he's out there practicing just in case the world stops spinning and hell freezes over and the Steelers move on to the second round. And then if they move on after that, then maybe Juju would be available to play. Go ahead and get him out there just in case. Also, if he can practice, then hey, get some practice in too. But that's really the news that has come out today. There hasn't been much in the way of the NFL. So Juju Smith-Schuster practicing for the Steelers and maybe doing TikToks before the game with Jackson Mahomes on Sunday.
That's the biggest battle of the day, right? Like, I just feel like you have two elite TikTokers there that could go head-to-head.
Are they elite? I don't know the rankings there.
They seem good at it.
Do we do 1 through 14 teams TikTokers?
Whoa!
Because who's
designated
elite?
TikToker. I think Jackson and Juju are maybe your 1 and 2. I mean, I really think Aaron Rodgers can't do a TikTok. I don't know any Packers that can, you know?
Who are the Packers TikTokers?
I really don't know.
It's not any of Aaron Rodgers' family. We know.
Yeah, they're not going to be there for it.
We know that.
He can't do most of the dances right now. His toe is hurt.
That's a
good
point, yeah.
I almost made a joke that I would have probably made if I didn't think it might get you in trouble, and so I pulled back on that. I'm a good teammate. You're welcome.
Appreciate that, man.
You're really welcome. Joe Burrow would just let Ja'Marr Chase do all the – he would hold the camera for – he would hold the phone for Ja'Marr Chase, and then Ja'Marr Chase would do all the work.
Chase would do the heavy lifting.
Corvette, yeah.
Burrow would get the assist, but Chase has the dunks and the threes, and Burrow throws the ball from the top of the key to the wing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chase hits the three, and Burrow gets the assist.
It's an assist, exactly.
Listen, you can't say Karl Malone without John Stockton.
If Corey was here, this is where he would say, speaking of Karl Malone, and I'm going, we're just moving on.
Sorry. So, I thought about doing a Corey impression today, but decided against it.
Yeah, well.
Did you see what Bart Scott said?
Yes, I did. I did see what Bart Scott said.
I can wait and talk about that when it's dark out tonight.
He would like Josh Allen to take some Viagra, or he thinks Josh Allen should take Viagra to keep the blood flowing because it's going to be so cold in Buffalo Saturday night.
Every sentence of context there matters more than the last, even, you know, like it's just
it's an odd takeaway
because Bart Scott said that guys used to do it all the time.
No, they did not.
That's what Bart Scott said. I don't know if he named names. I'll find the quote again.
The games, if you go into overtime and there's delays, it could last longer than 4 hours. Then what do you do?
Look, man,
you're going to leave overtime and go to the hospital.
Everyone knows this. Josh Allen is hard. To bring down in or out of the pocket.
Corey's not here.
This is Corey impression.
Sorry, I had to hit a cough button really quick. Why did you cut me off?
Dave's not here, man. No, it's just Dave, man. Dave's not here. Let's hear from Big Ben, who's going to lean a lot more
Speaking of hard to bring down. I meant as a quarterback.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
As a quarterback,
he is a bigger individual. That's why his name is Big Ben. Parliament. Let's hear from Big Ben, who says...
His nickname could have been Parliament.
Yes. Why? Big Ben, Parliament. We know, Dad. Big Ben.
I've just never heard that before. That's really
Parliament. You've never seen European Vacation, have you?
I don't even know what that is. Is that in the Christmas Vacation franchise?
Yeah, that would be pre-Christmas Vacation.
Oh, no kidding?
Post-original Vacation.
I've never had a vacation.
Have you ever seen Vacation?
I've heard of them.
Any of the vacations?
No. No, I'm an ofer on the vacation front.
So, last we've heard from Briscoe on the show.
If you want to pick
a
movie, I told a couple weeks ago. Sorry, I know you want to get to this audio.
Oh, you're fine.
I can't help myself. Let another joke go for your benefit. You're welcome. What a teammate. When I did the Border Patrol, we got to the point where everyone yelled at me enough of not seeing Caddyshack that I have the HBO Max app open on my phone because it's on HBO Max.
So are you watching it right now?
I'm watching it during. You talked to Matt and I just put my AirPods in and watched 30 minutes of it.
Great.
If there's a movie that Josh, you got this is the one.
Oh, I mean,
I'm going to take one. You can think about it.
The one.
There's a lot of movies that a lot of people love that I haven't seen, and I'm willing to chip away.
Confirm the list is very long.
Very, very disappointing. All right, speaking of disappointing, Big Ben says that, you know what? What's the point? We don't have a chance.
I would assume as a group you understand that, you know, we probably aren't supposed to be here. We're probably not a very good football team. We're out of 14 teams I think are in, we're probably number 14. We're a double-digit underdog in the playoffs. So let's just go play and have fun and see what happens. I mean, we're probably 20-point underdogs, and we're going to the number one team that's, I know they're not the number one seed, but they're the number one team that's won the AFC the last 2 years. Arguably the best team in football. We don't have a chance. So let's just go in and play and have fun.
Is there an element of raising concern for the Steelers when that's the feeling around their facilities and like, you know what, bleep this. Everybody's saying we don't have a chance. Okay. You know, different than one of 17 throughout the season as opposed to this is the last game. If you don't win, people think you suck. You don't belong here. You're not good enough. That everybody used that as a rallying cry where I don't believe the Chiefs are overlooking the Steelers at all. I don't think they would take that mindset. Chiefs fans can overlook them all they want because that's not going to have an impact on the game unless they don't show up to the game and they're just like, oh, hey, wine coolers and stickers on their face, and that's the way they go out and cheer, which isn't going to be the case either. Is there an element of being a little bit more concerned that a team just says, plays like, you know what, bleep you, we'll show you that we aren't as bad as we're made out to be. We're in the playoffs for a reason.
I like it, and I don't think it matters. It's a little bit of both,
my
here,
exact,
right?
My
is it?
Exact,
yes! Let's go!
It's my exact view. Like,
synchronicity.
I like that a player will do that and just go, oh, yeah. You know, and then you're like, you know what, bleep this. But I don't think it's going to matter.
Tom Brady has done that before in New England.
Julian
He's done
Edelman.
It in Tampa. Yes. Yeah, it's come from the Patriots a number of times, the group that universally says nothing ever. But when they do it, it is scary because you go, oh, great, Tom Brady's doing the fake humble thing. He's going to play this game until he's 65 years old. Like, there is an element of that depending on who's saying it, again, I think it's kind of fun. I think it's way more interesting than him going, you know, yeah, we're just going to take it one game at a time. You know, they're a good football team. We're mm-hmm. a good football team. We're going to take it seriously. We're going to go out there. No, man, just lean into it. Because this also, for the third time, I think now, is the last lap of Ben Roethlisberger around the NFL track. He can say whatever he wants here. And I hope he continues to do that up until kickoff of play it however you want. There is no consequence to anything that Roethlisberger will say at a podium this week, right? Of just, I suck, we suck, we're going to have fun, I'm proud of the guys, I'm not proud of the guys, whatever, it doesn't matter, he's not going to be there next year. So do it this way, or at least do it honestly. And that sounded kind of honest from Big Ben. Not that he meant what he was saying, but that's honest, like, yeah, guys, write us off.
I'd be a little more concerned if it was, let's say, AFC Championship. The Chiefs were going to Tennessee, and the Titans were going, oh, no, we suck. We're not right. supposed to be here. We're the worst number one seed anybody's ever seen. Chiefs are already, you know, planning their trip to L.A. They've got their hotels reserved. We're just going to go out here and see if we can, you know, give it a shot against this unbeatable team, and who knows what we can do, and maybe things will fall in our favor, and we'll get lucky, even though we beat them earlier in the year. I'd be more concerned about that because Tennessee is more of a
threat.
Yeah,
I mean, good team.
More of an opponent that can match up a little, certainly more than the Steelers can. I'm fine if they take that approach of we suck and who knows and they're awesome and we're going to lose by 20. Let's just see what happens because me, you, and Beards can suit up and go, you know what? Bleep this team. We're going to go and punk the Chiefs and we don't have a chance.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, J.J. Watt's there, or T.J. Watt's there.
Wouldn't matter which Watt.
Yeah, well, Chris Jones is there.
Right.
Well, you know, they've got Najee Harris. Yeah, Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. Like, yes, there's a player or two that you might worry about the Steelers. There's a whole freaking team in the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That Patrick Mahomes doesn't lose in the playoffs until he doesn't have an offensive line in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And he scores 30 points as long as he plays the entire game. Steelers aren't getting to 30. You don't have to mark that, Beards. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I was thinking about that as, you know, you were grabbing your wiener. And so I'm like, ah!
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll talk with Myron Metcalf coming up in the next segment. Some college basketball with Myron, our college basketball insider from ESPN. We've yet to get into the Kyle Brandt clip about Tyreek Hill. You know, we talked about that with Matt Lane, his opinion on what the Chiefs have to do or what they're missing. And it's obvious. I mean, we've talked about it before, whether or not the Chiefs' offense is the same. We know it's not the same, but yet they're scoring touchdowns at the same clip. You know, through 16 games this year, they had two less touchdowns than they had a year ago. They're not doing it with the big plays, but they're still scoring at the same amount from touchdowns. So, yeah, Tyreek Hill isn't offering those big plays, but he's doing some other things that are still making the offense dangerous and himself dangerous as well. But we'll talk some college basketball with Myron Metcalf from ESPN next.